Now, is he not a loser, delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring? I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We hope very soon we'll have Andrew Skousen from World of Preparers Brief here with us. And I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that some serious things are happening in the world. If you are watching the precious metals market, I can tell you that it's like the canary in the mine shaft. Something big is afoot. The people who are manipulating the world monetary system know what's happening. The smart investors know what's happening. And silver was up almost 20 cents again today. Gold up $10 an ounce. And this simply foreshadows very difficult financial times that lie ahead. And then, of course, we see our government intent upon going to war with Iran. Oh, my goodness, Iran is a terrible country. Not only that, but Iran has said that if they are attacked, that they will make reprisals against America. They will do everything they can to, attack back again if they're attacked. And, of course, our leaders in Washington, D.C. are saying, what a terrible thing. Why, they're threatening the United States. Well, they're only threatening the United States. If we attack them, they're going to attack back. But you see, that's not the way the game is played. They're not supposed to attack back. They're just supposed to do what they're told. But unfortunately, there are people in Iran who really want to provoke a third world war. There are people in our government who want to provoke a clash of civilizations who are doing everything they can to inflame the Muslims throughout the world, and that's why they put out all those pictures of the mistreatment of Muslims down there at Guantanamo. And most of these people had not committed any crime, but they were imprisoned and tortured there and treated very badly, at least initially. And certainly, why did we release all the pictures of Abu Ghraib prison? Why didn't you just take care of this very quietly? No, they've done everything they could to inflame the Muslims throughout the world. And, of course, the Muslims resent the fact that we're occupying their holy land. Don't you understand, ladies and gentlemen, you can't go into countries and try to destroy their culture, and that's exactly what we're doing, and we're going to unite the Muslims throughout the world against the United States, and that's exactly what our leaders want, as Michael Ledeen said, and he was writing on the 30th of October. Michael Ledeen is one of the architects of what's going on, or at least associated with the people who are already have laid out this whole master plan that long preceded 9/11. And Michael Ledeen, writing in the Wall Street Journal on the 30th of October, 2001, just 7 weeks after the 9/11 attack, said, "The hunt for Osama bin Laden is simply the opening salvo in a great war that will transform the Middle East. The hunt for Osama bin Laden is simply the opening salvo in a great war that will transform the Middle East." It was all planned ahead of time, and of course there are going to be terrible consequences. And if you don't get involved and get informed and help us inform others, then you become part of the problem. And men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Well, we have with us right now Andrew Skousen from World Affairs Brief. Hi, how are you doing, Andrew?
Just fine. Good evening. Glad to be with you, Dr. Sam.
And I appreciate so much your coming on with us this evening. And, of course, Andrew is just going to be going through the World Affairs Brief, and you really need to go to that website every morning to find out what's really going on in the world. Pick up the story there, Andrew.
Well, Dr. Stan, I was going to say I appreciate your opening comments. You touched on several topics that I think some of the specifics in the World Affairs Brief this week would support a lot of what you are saying.
So, well, we're going to let you go ahead and cover those things as soon as we get back here at Radio Liberty. Andrew, go right ahead.
All right. Well, I'd like to comment briefly about what you were talking about with inflation and the value of money. There's an article in the World Affairs Brief this week that addresses an interesting article that popped up in the news recently that talked about, this is from freemarketnews.com, and they reported that the Federal Reserve ordered $2 trillion to be printed. Three separate sources in the U.S. Treasury told this particular reporter that the Federal Reserve had ordered $2 trillion to be printed. So the story goes on to explain that the U.S. Treasury is printing at 24/7. This, of course, it's just paper money that is going to be put out into the market and flood things. People familiar with economics realize that this is the way that inflation occurs, and that this is a danger sign to our monetary currency and the value of the U.S. dollar, both abroad as well as right here at home.
I think it's important that people understand that if you really study the statistics, right now there are about $700 billion, less than $1 trillion of money actually in circulation, real money. Then, of course, you've got your monetary increments, your M1, which is your checking accounts, a certain types of deposits, your traveler's checks, and that's only about $1.2 or $1.3 trillion. If this is really true, they're simply printing money at that rate. Their plan then is to destroy the American dollar. There's no question, because there's only $700 billion in circulation in the entire world. That's real money. And so, I think that we have to really question what they're up to and why they suddenly do not want to publish the M3 statistics. And for those of you who don't understand all of this, we'll be covering a lot of that in our new talk on the financial tsunami, and that'll be available in a couple of weeks along with the syllabus. And you'll understand what all of these monetary increments are and why suddenly does the Federal Reserve not want to provide the M3 figures, which is the total amount of money in the world, all the dollars in the world, all the bank deposits, all the everything, the money market funds. There's only a little over $10 trillion in the entire world in curing euro dollars. Why would they suddenly say, gee, it's too expensive to come up with the M3 figures when they've come up with them for 50 years? What are they hiding? If there's nothing to hide, why are they hiding it? So I agree with you. I think we're in real trouble. Something big is afoot.
Yeah, it's true. Just a side note, while we're on the topic about them hiding the statistics of the M3.
Hold that thought for just a moment here, and we'll be right back. Well, this is Andrew Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Andrew Scouse, and he's simply talking about there's rumors out there that the Federal Reserve System is going to massively expand the monetary supply, and that it's been said, whether it's true or not, I can't verify, but that they're actually in the process of printing $2 trillion. Now, I don't know if that's true, because I can tell you that all the money in circulation in the entire world, real money, bills, a currency, coin, is only $700 billion. M1 is about $1.3 trillion. So if they're really printing in currency that amount of money, their intent is to destroy our entire economy, destroy the value of the dollar. And the stability of the dollar reflects the stability of the nation. Destroy the currency, you destroy the nation. Why would our leaders want to do such a thing, unless maybe they have another agenda and a different loyalty? Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, that's a very interesting idea. Here at the World Affairs Brief, there's been quite a bit of talk about the devaluation of the U.S. dollar, particularly if perhaps the oil nations decided to cash in or trade in all of their U.S. currency that they use for exchange, essentially the current exchange for oil and petroleum has been or is currently U.S. dollars, which means, of course, that any country that wants to buy oil from the nation states like Saudi Arabia and the other countries down there have to pay for it in U.S. dollars. There's been quite a bit of talk about them switching to kind of a conglomerate of currencies, and maybe even switching completely to the euro. And there's been a great deal of talk about what effects this would have. Here at the World Affairs Brief, we are of the opinion that this isn't going to happen, that the great devaluation of the currency isn't going to take place because of any group of nations or any single nation trying to cash in all of their U.S. dollars. And I think the reason for that is that most of these nations would stand to to lose a great deal if the U.S. currency did become devalued. Basically, it's like they're holding stocks in U.S. dollars by them holding all of these dollars, and if they did start to dump all this currency back into the U.S., that it would devalue the very stock that they are holding. So I think that because the dollar is used so widespread that it will tend to be more resilient to being completely to losing its value completely. And I mean, now that isn't to say that if they truly are printing these $2 trillion that it won't affect us. On the contrary, like you said, it's a massive amount of fiat money that could absolutely flood the market. And so it's probable that this is partly a rumor, but it's also possible that they are planning something big with respect to the dollar, that there's a lot of expenditures coming in, and they are resorting to pure straight inflation to pay for things. And if anyone has watched the way that this particular administration has been spending lately, they'll know that a great deal of it has to come out of thin air, just because there isn't enough tax money coming in to pay for things like the war on Iraq or the massive black budget and military and non-military programs that are going into effect, as well as to placate all of the different socialist programs that our government currently runs.
Well, I think the most incredible thing about the current administration is that they cut taxes, which I'm all in favor of, but then they massively increase spending.
Yeah.
The Bush administration has run up over $3 trillion in debt, since it's been in office. Now, remember, it took almost 200 years from 1789 until 1979 to run up $1 trillion in debt. And when President Reagan left the White House, the debt was about $2.8 trillion. When George Bush got in the White House, the federal debt was about $5.2 trillion. Today it's over $8.3 trillion and rising at a phenomenal rate. It'll be going up, if you're really honest about it, pretty close to $600-700 billion every year under the Bush administration. They lie about the figures. They quote the figures. They have a budget, for instance, but then they don't bother to put in the price of what's going on in Iraq or all the money that they're going to have to give to the people down in New Orleans, which, of course, is unconstitutional. And then all the money they steal from Social Security and Medicare, they just spend that. So when they talk about, they admit $400 billion is coming here, they'll steal about $250 billion from Medicare fund. That's illegal, but that's all right. They put an IOU for it. And then, of course, another $100 billion for the war in Iraq. So you're talking at least $700 billion, and I'm sure they'll find other means. There's no better way to destroy a nation than to destroy its currency. That's why Rome fell. That's why ancient Greece fell. That's why they got Adolf Hitler in Germany, in 1933, was because of the destruction of the monetary system and the terrible suffering that came with it. And I fear an awful lot of Americans are going to be wiped out. And you better start, ladies and gentlemen, preparing yourself financially for the difficult times that lie ahead. So go ahead, Andrew.
That's right. And in addition, an additional comment about the difficult times that are coming. It's been very interesting to me to watch what happens during a presidential election year with the economy, because a strong economy has historically provided the largest support for the current administration, and a weak economy has done the most for changing the president and his political party than any other factor that has influenced things. So it's possible that this may be the first signs of setting the stage up for a political party change in the next elections. If this inflationary currency takes its path and its course, it could take probably around 2 years before the full effects of it are felt, and the economy would start to slow down, and we would see more joblessness and more problems with higher prices, etc. And that I think could affect the election year.
And that's very interesting. Of course, we had a Bush administration, then we had a Clinton administration. Now we've got another Bush administration. Certainly, in 2008, we might get another Clinton administration. It's almost like we have an imperial presidency, doesn't it? And the same families dominating Washington, D.C. Incidentally, I think that we certainly should take that story about that the $2 trillion they're printing with a grain of salt. It's a story that's out there. I'm not sure it's true. I could not imagine them doing that. I think they're putting out a lot of information intentionally to confuse us. And so certainly a World Affairs Brief does a very good job of sifting through this information for you. But that I really question, knowing full well what the M1, M2, and M3 figures are, and those of you who get our syllabus, of course, will know and begin to understand what these figures are that they throw around intensely to confuse you. So go ahead, Andrew. Pardon me. Go ahead.
Yes, and I think that it's very important that people understand how important it is to know what the M3 figures are, the actual total amount of worldwide dollars that are out there. This includes, you know, the actual physical dollars and coins, as well as all of the numerical numbers of dollars in bank accounts, etc. And if this amount isn't reported each year, people can't actually tell where all of the inflation is coming from, because inflation doesn't always just come from printing of monetary physical dollars. It can actually be inflated by other means.
And they can simply create money by loans. They can create money by bank entries. They can lower the interest rates. They can lower the reserve requirements. There's all sorts of means they have of expanding the money supply that people don't understand, because they don't understand that banks make money out of nothing. They create money, and then they have the audacity to charge you interest on it. It's the greatest scam in the world.
Yeah, that is correct. And so this M3 statistic is important to be able to keep track of how much our money supply is being inflated. Now, Representative Ron Paul has recently introduced legislation to require the Fed to resume reporting this statistic. And if you ever have the opportunity, it's important to support this legislation, which is called the Sunshine and Monetary Policy Act. And like I said, Representative Ron Paul, a Republican from Texas, is advocating this bill. All right, well, let's switch gears slightly. I'd like to talk a little bit about Iran and talk about a possible U.S. strategy there that is kind of interesting to think about.
Well, I think that every American should be concerned, because it should be obvious to anyone who thinks about what's going on that our government is intent upon attacking Iran. And if you think that we can attack Iran, we can kill a few thousand Iranians, or maybe 10,000 or 50,000 Iranians, and they're not going to be consequences here in America, I think you're sadly mistaken. When you have people in government who are intent upon going to war, it's going to affect everybody in this country, just as Adolf Hitler was intent upon going to war in Europe. So our administration is intent upon going to war with the entire Islamic world. Well, Andrew, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story there?
All right. Well, in your opening comments, you were talking about Iran and the strong indicators that are out there in the news that this is going to be the next target for U.S. attack. Here at the World Affairs Brief, we strongly believe that this is the case, that Iran is in the sight of the U.S. and is being set up for an attack. What is difficult to reconcile with this story, of course, and what most of us Americans have difficulty believing about this story is that we are already so bogged down in Iraq, so much of our manpower is tied up there. How would it even be physically possible for the U.S. to take on even a bigger country than Iraq, which is, of course, Iran in this case? And there is an interesting and, we think, a savvy commentator by the Hindu newspaper. This was written by Sudhart Varadarajan, and he has an interesting article, which is rather in-depth. He talks a lot about the various international pressures and sanctions against Iran and the various ways that that the U.S. is kind of jostling with this pre-attack, similar to what happened with Iraq. But his final point in the analysis, I think, is worth bringing up. He says, if Iran were ever to commit this folly of antagonizing the U.S., the U.S. regime change plan will move swiftly into high gear. As and when force is used, it would likely be a Yugoslav-style prolonged air war aimed at targeting civilian and industrial infrastructure rather than an Iraq-style invasion. We believe that this is most likely the way that Iran will be attacked. The U.S., of course, doesn't have the manpower for another massive-scale invasion and occupation of this country, but they could very certainly do a bombing campaign and attempt to annihilate many targets using this kind of standoffish.
Obviously, we certainly destroyed Kosovo very well, very efficiently with our bombing attack. And, of course, we have certainly air superiority, and we would be able to wreak terrible havoc on Iran. But after all, remember what one nuclear bomb would do in New York, or maybe seven nuclear bombs in seven major cities in America. And if anybody out there in the listening audience thinks that we're going to get off simply attacking another country and Iran will not make reprisals against America, they have been listening to Rush Limbaugh for too long. Go ahead.
That's right. It's important, I think, to reiterate what a portion of what we believe the purpose of attacking Iran is, and that is to actually create more antagonism towards the U.S. And while a full-scale invasion would certainly create that, just like it has in Iraq, a long-range bombing campaign would produce almost the same value, so to speak, of this effect without having to actually go into the country, you know, with soldiers per se.
And of course, the thing is, what would that do to the price of oil here in the United States and throughout the world? And we'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Andrew is saying that it is the feeling at the World Affairs Brief that if there is to be an attack on Iran, and there probably will be, it will be a massive air attack, not a ground-launched Zania affair. But, of course, we can kill an awful lot of people. We can do a lot of damage with an air attack, and certainly there is no way, of course, they would be able to effectively defend themselves. But, of course, the question I raised was, what would happen to the price of oil? Would they close the Straits of Hormuz there? Would they attack our military probably vessels? Certainly they have very sophisticated weapons. What would happen if they sank one of our major aircraft carriers? What would that do? Why, there'd be tremendous, people would be outraged in America that they sank an American aircraft carrier after we used it as a platform for bombing Iran. What sort of madness is this? People in Washington, D.C. are saying how terrible it is. The Iranians are threatening to make reprisals if we attack them. Why, you know, they just can't believe that the Iranians would be that audacious. Well, go ahead, pick up the story there.
That's right, and you bring up a good point that no matter how the U.S. is going to approach this, Iran is not a mild enemy. This is just with conventional weapons and arms, Iran is a much more formidable foe and would be much more difficult to target and placate than say, to the extent that we have done with Iraq. So it'll be very interesting to watch how this unfolds and see, even if this long-range attack were to take place, how Iran would react to it, and whether or not they would try to play the sort of innocent victim card and try to gain international support and thus inflame international opinions against the U.S. even more, or if they would retaliate and possibly cause further sparks against the U.S. and Israel. It'll be interesting to watch.
Now, well, of course, we have books written by Yosef Bedansky, who is the a senior advisor to the Republicans on foreign policy in the House of Representatives. We have a book he wrote back in 1993 called Target America. He talked about the Iranian terror cells that were here at that time. He's mentioned this in his subsequent books. There is no question from our other sources. There are Iranian terror cells here in the United States waiting for the word to be given, because, you see, everything that's going on has long-range planning. The Iranians have been planning on making reprisals when we attack them. But remember, we brought the radical regime to power back in 1979. Why did we, first of all, topple Mossadegh in 1953 and put the Shah in power, and then topple the Shah in 1979 and intentionally bring the radical Islamic regime to power in Iran in 1979? None of this makes sense unless everything is somehow orchestrated and there is a grand plan behind everything going on. So pick up the story.
Well, I'd like to comment further on what you say about Iranian terror cells here in the United States. I think this is a good point to talk about the dangers of the open immigration that we have here. If I can switch topics here.
Okay, go right ahead.
Specifically because there have been no small-scale terrorist attacks here in the U.S., and the World Affairs Brief has been particularly concerned about this. It doesn't make any sense that that major terror cells could pull off large-scale attacks such as what happened at 9/11, and yet not create massive, mayhem and terror attacks on small scale throughout the country. I mean, we have open borders right now. Thousands of people can come across our borders unimpeded, and this situation is basically an open invitation to anyone to smuggle things through here and to set up small bases and cadres here at a moment's notice. So I think the issue of national security as it relates to immigration is a very real topic, and one that is not being addressed appropriately right now with the current Bush administration policies toward it. Immigration.
And of course, the thing is, we're really involved in a war on terrorism. Why didn't the first thing they do was seal our borders so that Iranian terrorists couldn't come in that way? Of course, they can come in with a visa, but nothing we're doing really makes any sense unless there's another agenda behind everything that's going on. Unless we have thoroughly infiltrated all of the terror cells here in the United States, and I know we had. If you haven't seen the video Jihad in America, some of this film footage was shot in 1988 and 1989, and they knew who all the terrorists were there. They knew who all the terrorists are now, but we couldn't let the American people know what was going to happen on 9/11, could we? Because then we wouldn't believe anything the government said. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Andrew Skousen. Andrew, you pick up the story there.
Great. Well, we were talking about immigration and the policies of the current Bush administration, and I'd like to highlight one of the recent current events that has occurred with the immigration protests that were visible on the news this past couple of weeks, where we saw large number of demonstrators in Chicago and in L.A. and in Sacramento and in many of the major cities that that had thousands of people out marching the streets, most of them illegal immigrants who were decrying the supposed draconian immigration law that was recently approved by the by Congress.
Now, you mentioned it's a draconian. The Congress, House of Representatives, passed a draconian law intentionally not to get it passed. They passed legislation knowing full well that it would create such an uproar, that it, you know, and of course there's no way it's ever going to be passed in Washington, D.C. to the Senate. So why did they do it? Were they posturing? No, they were trying to inflame people all across the country. And, you know, who is behind these riots? You don't get 100,000 people out, 500,000 people out, just spontaneously saying, hey, we're going to have a demonstration next Friday. Why don't you come on down and bring your Mexican flag with you? This whole thing is intensely planned and orchestrated. Somebody's orchestrating it. Who's doing that, Andrew?
Exactly. Now that is the point that I would like to bring up, is that every single large scale march or every single large scale protest is never spontaneous. People just don't suddenly get together and grab their friends. Kids don't suddenly decide to walk out of schools all on the same day, all on the same morning, and combine and meet in the same place. Protests have to be organized. It takes a great deal of planning. It takes a great deal of money. It takes a great deal of coordination, especially between major cities where all of these protests occurred. This takes forethought and a great deal of it, in fact.
And a lot of money. It takes a lot of money, a lot of planning. And they know exactly what they're doing. They know how to get the people out. They know how to get them inflamed. They know how to get the confrontations going. And many times there's even cooperation with the leaders of the police force. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Andrew Skousen. Andrew, before I go on, why don't we just get your website out, telephone number, if there is one, so if people would be interested in getting the World Affairs Brief.
Certainly, Dr. Stan. I think one of the best ways for people to get in contact with the World Affairs Brief is to log on to our website, which is found at www.worldaffairsbrief.com. That's all one word. www.worldaffairsbrief.com, and there they can find links to what we consider the most important news stories, and they can also find links to subscribe to the weekly World Affairs Brief, which is an email brief, and that is our analysis of the news. They can also get a paper copy of the World Affairs Brief by calling toll-free 1-877-518-5888. That's toll-free 1-877-518-5888. And the written World Affairs Brief is a monthly brief that comes in the mail as a compilation of all of the weekly briefs that are sent out by email.
Of course, it's easy if you can get it by email. It's a wonderful thing to do. You'll really enjoy it. But let me suggest that, as I do first thing every morning after I go through my emails, I go to World Affairs Brief to find out what the major issues are, what the major articles are, you know, for the day. And they've done all the research for me. I don't have to go to the Hindu Times or the Asia Times or the, all of these Southeast Asia Times or Reuters. It's all right there for us. So go ahead. Andrew was certainly talking about how they get these people out to demonstrate. And of course, we've seen it with the so-called immigrant issues. They call them immigrant demonstrations. They are demonstrations for illegal aliens, people who are here in this country illegally. Have you ever noticed how they never call them illegal aliens? It's always immigrants. Words have a very powerful meaning. The fact that these people have violated our laws to be here, the fact that these people are being manipulated by the communists, who and by the people within MALDAVE and LULAC, these organizations funded largely by your own government and by the Ford Foundation, who want this sort of discord in our, this sort of conflict within our society. They want a multicultural, multilingual society so they can play one group against another. They know exactly what they're doing. They know how to get the people out, how to organize them. It takes a lot of money, and believe me, the communists are there, but then the Ford Foundation has always funded the communists, and until you understand how the Ford Foundation interlocks with this whole radical left revolutionary movement worldwide, you can't understand anything going on today. Well, go ahead.
That's right, and I think that there are two insidious points to make about these riots and protests that were going on. Number one, especially with a group like illegal immigrants, which try very hard to hide in the fabric of society and not be found, but they were able to pull all of these people together and organize them, define them to get them to come out and march, is an indication of the amount of support and organization and funds and money that went into this. Especially, like I said, across multiple major cities. This wasn't just one neighborhood that just kind of sprung up with these. This is all over the place, meeting in these town squares, etc.
And of course, if they really wanted to put a stop to this foolishness, they would simply cordon off the area, ask people for identification. If they didn't, put them in a bus and send them back to Mexico or wherever they came from, and tell them the next time they came back, they're going to spend 3 years in prison, something like that. And that would discourage it. But the big thing you'd want to do, you could stop illegal immigration tomorrow by enforcing the laws that are on the books that makes it a crime for any employer to employ people who are here illegally and knowingly do that. And of course, none of our major employers who are hiring literally millions of these people, are ever fined. We have a very selective use of the laws. We go after Martha Stewart because she got a tip on a stock, but we're not going to go after the employers who are hiring these people. You stop the jobs, the people are going to go home. It would be just that simple. They don't want to solve the problem. They want the problem because they want, of course, to use the conflict to turn American against American and American against Hispanic and Hispanic against American. And the illegal immigrants are simply pawns in this game, just as you and I are. Go ahead, Andrew.
Precisely. That's a very important point, Dr. Stan, especially about how areas were not cordoned off, how the police must have been told not to try to stop these protests, which indicates an even higher level of organization. Because if you saw the newscast of these, there were almost no visible police officers or security at these protests attended by these thousands of illegal aliens, particularly those in downtown Charlotte on March 25th. To get an idea of why they would want to organize this protest, I think deserves some comment. If we examine a little bit of the direction that the Bush administration has been going recently with its immigration policies, you would find that almost all of the directions have been towards making it easier on illegal immigrants, particularly the recent attempts by our inspector's amnesty bill, which has been titled the Guest Worker Bill. In a nutshell, this bill would say that they would offer a 3 years guest worker card to any illegal immigrant who was willing to come forward and have their identification be taken down, and then they would be given this 3 years amnesty, essentially, to work in the U.S. Supposedly, at the end of the 3 years, they would reconvene every one of these people and reconsider whether they should stay in the U.S. or be deported.
And I suppose they're going to come back, you know, when they're told to, the second time, of course they're not going to. The government is lying. In 1986, they promised, look, we're going to have an amnesty for all 3 or 4 million illegals here, and we will never do this again. They promised us, and they passed all these severe laws, you know, to guard our borders and to go after the employers who are employing the illegal aliens. And then they refuse to enforce the laws because they really want this problem. They want, of course, to destroy the sovereignty of the United States. A nation that can't guard its borders is not a sovereign nation. They really, the purpose of the Bush administration, and of course the Democratic leadership as well, is to merge the United States with Mexico and then the rest of the Western Hemisphere, at least the Northern Hemisphere. Their goal is, of course, a one world government, that they first of all will consolidate the Northern Hemisphere. And actually, you go to the Council on Foreign Relations website, and they're the people who really run the government and tell George Bush what to do. At least the leaders of these little cliques that all tie into the secret societies, because, of course, the Council on Foreign Relations is the front for a secret society. A secret society was formed back in 1891 by Cecil Rhodes, and anybody will find that on, I think, on pages 951, 952 of Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World at a Time, and he was Bill Clinton's mentor. So understand, they know exactly what they're doing. They want to unite the United States with Mexico and do away with our borders, and then there won't be a problem. We'll make all of the people who are here illegally legal, and then there's no longer a problem. Let's go to, we've got Mike calling in from Santa Cruz. He's been waiting very patiently. Mike, did you have a question for Andrew?
Well, just a comment, a little something for the immigrant conversation or discussion. Have you heard this new one, this quote from the Mexicana Airlines in-flight magazine? It says, with all due respect, Los Angeles is ours.
Sure, but you see, this is all, of course, to just get us angry so that they can play us against them and them against us.
I mean, they have this explanation and a rationale.
Sure, but they have to understand that this is being all funded by the Ford Foundation that's just been funding these organizations for illegal aliens. Why would a tax-exempt organization be allowed to support organizations that advocate breaking our laws? Why, very simply, because our leaders want that sort of thing. They have no loyalty to America. They're dedicated to globalism. And the poor Mexicans, they're being manipulated in this whole thing.
It's absolutely true, and that's a good point.
Now, go ahead, Mike.
There's everything in it for them. They get the United States out of the deal.
Well, of course, but they don't understand. They're going to lose in the end. If they got the United States, they'd end up just like Mexico. Only they'd be a lot poorer. They'd have to pay off all of our debts. Okay, Mike.
Yeah, that's a good one. If they want our money, they have to take our debt, too.
Thanks so much, Mike. Bye-bye.
Right.
Okay, fine. Go ahead. Go ahead, Andrew.
All right, well, I absolutely agree with your analysis about the intent of the Bush administration with this, and I think it's underscored by the fact that the Bush administration is actually heading upstream against almost every single grassroots American citizenship or every American citizen organization with this. What you will find consistently across the board of both Democrat and Republican constituencies is a concern about illegal immigration. Even immigrants who have come here and eventually applied legally and gotten their citizenship appropriately express concern about the amount and extent of illegal immigration in this nation. So to see an administration in a fairly democratic system such as ours take such a radical stance about encouraging illegal immigration and proposing these measures to provide amnesty towards them seems sort of at odds, unless you realize what you were just explaining, Dr. Stan, that there is a hidden agenda here, that they are attempting to water down the core national citizenship of this nation and create this dependent welfare oriented groups that will drag the United States toward conflict and conflagration, which will end up eroding our natural rights.
And of course, we'll raise the living standards of the average American to that of the Mexican peasant. And that's what it's all about. They're going to impoverish our people, destroy our economy, but it destroy our sovereignty, destroy our nation. We should be calling what these people are doing traitors, and the tragedy is all the good Republicans, Christian Republicans across America, so many of them are supporting our Christian president because, after all, he's done so much good. And he would not do anything harmful, or they might disagree with a few things that he does, but he's a good man. We know he's a good man because he prays to God every single day. At least this is what we're told. I just have to question, what God is he praying to? Go ahead.
That's a good point. Well, I would like to bring into context this current protest and the recent bill that seemed to pass without much opposition. Given the track record of the Bush administration, when a bill such as this one that has some tough immigration guidelines, this bill that supposedly caused all of these protests, let's sort of examine what the causes and effects of this bill were and what it does to the overall atmosphere now. What happened was a tough immigration bill passed Congress back in December. This is especially interesting because until now there's a great deal of foot dragging and in difficulty getting anything passed at all. This new bill has a couple of important things in it. It would actually make it a felony for illegal immigrants to be in the U.S., and it would impose newer and even stricter penalties on employers who hire illegal immigrants. It would also call for a 700-mile fence, which would essentially create a fence around one-third of the border's total length between the U.S. and Mexico.
And Chris, well, that's so foolish. I mean, if you're going to build a fence, you build a fence along the whole way. So
yeah,
none of this, the entire through. Legislation, it was destined to fail, and it was intended to fail, according to Congressman Tom Tancredo, who's been leading the battle for logical immigration control. So the Republican leaders put this up, as simply something that you could swat at, and knowing full well it would be totally ineffective, it would never pass.
Exactly, and it's very interesting what effect this had, because all of the Republican constituency that felt betrayed before with the Bush administration's policies toward immigration could now point to this and say, no, no, look, the Republicans really are on our side. Look what they tried to pass. You know, this is a good thing. Obviously, they had to water it down to be able to get it to pass, and look, it seemed to pass. And then there's all of these riots, and the news media brings up all of these camera and news time and focus on all of the immigrants who are out protesting, all of these well-organized, well-financed marches, and then this allows room for the legislators to say, okay, well, we've got to scuttle this legislation.
And they always intended to do it. It's ladies and gentlemen,
yes.
We play games with this all the time. And you better understand that our leadership have no loyalty to America. Their loyalty is to the international's goal. We've got Jeff calling from New Mexico. Jeff, did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, does your guest know of any mines that the United States has put on our side of the border down by Mexico to keep the Mexicans from coming in?
You're talking about landmines?
Right.
I never heard of that. Have you heard all about that?
No, I haven't heard about any landmines. I'd frankly be quite surprised if that was the case.
Jeff, I would not believe that there are landmines there under any circumstances. I think that's a vicious rumor that's being put out.
Well, you know, the reason why is because, well, can I wait after the break here?
Well, what was the point you wanted to make?
They're playing a videotape in the lobby at New Mexico State University Library. that says that, basically, it's in Spanish, it's propaganda to get rabble-roused the Hispanic students that there's mines down there.
Sure, well, I think you're absolutely right. And they're manipulating these poor students, they're manipulating us, too. I don't fall for any of this. I mean, most of the Hispanics are good people. They simply are impoverished. They're looking for a better life. If we enforced our laws, there wouldn't be a problem. We don't need new laws. We need to enforce the laws we already have. They have no intention of that because our leaders do not believe in American sovereignty. Anything else you want to say, Jeff?
Yeah.
Hold that. We'll be back in just a moment. Jeff, what else did you want to say?
Well, have you ever heard of the Buffalo Soldiers?
No, I haven't.
In New Mexico, in the times of the Apache Indians, the government brought down African-American federal troops to fight the Apaches. And, you know, have you heard of these towns along the Texas-Mexico border that they're conducting government in Spanish?
No, I really haven't. Okay, well, thanks so very much for bringing us to bed. We've got Laverne in Spokane. Laverne, did you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. Is it possible for Tom Cantrito? I never see their name in print. I don't know how it's spelled.
It's Tancredo is the way it's spelled.
Oh, and Sensenbrenner, you know, they had Tancredo on KSPS 7. When they have guests, they usually put his name on there, and they didn't.
Well, you have to understand that the media is controlled. That's why they never refer to illegal aliens. Who are here illegally, they're immigrants. They're immigrants. These are immigrant demonstrations. Understand they're playing games with our minds, Laverne.
Yeah. Is it possible for Sensenbrenner and Tancredo. To run for president under the Republican Party, we need to clean house, and the Democrats need to clean house. Get those professional politicians out of there.
All right, let's get Andrew's response. How would you respond to Laverne's remarks?
Well, I have to say that I would personally like to see some politicians who aren't brought up in the establishment. I think as you have so often pointed out, Dr. Stan, so many of the people that are put forward as the only candidates for the American people to vote on are all from the Bilderberger group. They're from, all of these secret societies that just kind of bring these people up since they were children to form them and indoctrinate them and create these politicians, and then they are, filling both slots in both the Republican and the Democrats, and put forth by the news media as having opposite agendas when in fact they have the ultimate goal.
In fact, it was the Bush family that gave the award for the Bush Foundation in the year 2003 to the best politician, the most outstanding politician. Who do you think they gave it to? To Ted Kennedy. Who's George W. Bush's closest, George Herbert Walker Bush's closest friend? Bill Clinton. Ladies and gentlemen, to put on, hey, thanks very much for calling, Laverne. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, we've got one more caller and then no more. Tom, waiting in Colorado. Do you have a quick question for our guest?
Yes. Earlier this week, when the two USA senators went to China and threatened China with a 30% tax on imports of all Chinese-made products, I knew that China was going to cave in to the UN Security Council resolution that the United States and France and England were pushing against Iran. And sure enough, within 24 hours, China caved in and signed on to a resolution that said Iran must stop refining uranium within 1 month. And I felt really sad, because China had been, it was like Machiavellian treachery against Iran, and they betrayed Iran, and now Iran is in a really bad spot now, and I think it's looking really bad for Iran, and I feel really sad about the whole situation.
Well, I certainly agree with you, but you have to understand that they control all sides. The same forces are working in Iran that are working here. This is a satanic conspiracy, Tom, and Satan plays both sides against the middle. Thanks so much for calling. And certainly, Andrew, thank you so very much for coming on with us. Andrew came on very short notice. God bless you. And once again, your website is?
My website is www.worldaffairsbrief.com. One word, worldaffairsbrief.com. And our telephone number is toll-free, 877-518-5888.
God bless you. Thanks very much, Andrew. Fantastic. Great program. Bye-bye. Yeah. All right. Bye. That was Andrew Skousen. Hope you enjoyed it. And, of course, this is the time when I have to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We're dependent upon those of you who call us to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day, 60 outlets every single week. We need your help, quite frankly. And if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, you can reach us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. This is the last week we'll be offering, at least hopefully, cases of my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you want to get a single copy, or you can get a whole case of them at a remarkable opportunity. If you have not certainly seen the video or the DVD, they're available. And then, of course, we carry the Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, a fascinating DVD that will take you into the secret societies that were working at the time America was created and left their mark. You will see it on the back of the dollar bill. The pyramid, capped by the all-seeing eye of Lucifer, beneath the inscription, "In God We Trust." It's an inside joke. They understand, and they laugh at how foolish we are. They hide their symbols in plain sight. 666. You'll see at the World Future Society and logo of the Trilateral Commission. This is all satanic, and when you understand that, it all makes sense. And the leaders of Iran want World War III. The leaders of the United States want World War III. And you know what's said, when elephants battle, it's only the grass that's hurt. And that's going to be you and I and our children. And they're going to destroy the economy of America, and they're going to destroy our freedom in the process. Get involved. Help us. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. Of course, give us a call. Get our material. Tell others about our program. Try to get them to think. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers, because this truly is a spiritual battle. And finally, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so, till we're together again, may the Lord be with you. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Shane Ellison, and Shane certainly has his master's in biological sciences. He worked for one of the largest drug companies for many years, and of course, when he realized what they were doing and the harm that they were doing, the people, why he left that job, but he's been on a crusade to try to educate the American people about some of the scams that are being carried out on the American people today in the name of a medicine that's supposed to help us. And he's certainly put together a book which we carry called on statin drugs, and we actually put together a 4-tape set on statin drugs, because this is one of the greatest scams ever put forward in the American people. And you will be told, if you do not take statin drugs and you have a high cholesterol, you're going to die. Well, I want to tell you they're absolutely right. We're all going to die. But are you going to die because you have a high cholesterol? Or, you know, in fact, half the people who have heart attacks have a normal cholesterol. And after a while, what is a normal cholesterol? It used to be 260, 270, 280. Then when I was practicing, the upper limit was 230. Now the upper limit is 200, and they want to get you down to maybe to 170. But of course, there are terrible things that happen to you and to your body and to your physiology as you lower the cholesterol, because you do it by poisoning the liver. That's how this works, and that the products, the statin drugs, come out of the things that you put, the medication, the pharmacological action that you get in mushrooms that poison the liver. And that's what they're doing. So anyway, with that as the background, Shane, thank you so much for being with us again.
Well, thanks for having me on the show. I'm very excited, and I think it's a tremendous show, and I know we have lots of people very interested in this topic of cholesterol and high cholesterol and statin drugs.
Well, now, what do you do when people come up and the doctors will say, look, you have a 50% increase or 40 or 30% increase in your longevity if you take these drugs. You certainly don't want to die of a stroke or heart attack. How do you respond to them?
Well, it's very difficult. Most people are in this fear mindset of cholesterol. They fear cholesterol more than they fear terrorists. Most anybody you talk to who's 50 years old is either considering a statin drug or they are on a statin drug. And I really have to emphasize to people that over the last 100 years, scientific studies have shown that the higher our cholesterol, the longer we live. In other words, as we get older, cholesterol naturally increases because it's actually protective. And the drug companies learned how to test cholesterol levels in the body, and they learned how to isolate a poison from red yeast rice and call it a drug. Now they've learned how to get everybody on these drugs to lower this so-called high cholesterol to prevent a heart attack. It's an absolute health myth. It's a health myth designed to put people on drugs, or I call it turning healthy people into patients.
Well, I think it's really, as you develop these ideas, you've been going into what this scientific literature really says. You know, you'll find out that most of what your doctor is going to tell you is not true. That's not that your doctor is a bad person. He's not. But he's never actually analyzed many of the articles. He's never seen many of the articles from the major centers who said, this is a scam. It doesn't do any good. He's never analyzed all the other causes of heart attack. He's never actually seen what the difference was between the people who are on the statin drugs and were not. If you look at the absolute statistic, you'll be amazed to find out what the doctors have never been told. Okay, fine, Shane. Why don't you go ahead and pick up the story there on the statin drugs? Because certainly, first of all, it's red yeast rice. This is actually a liver poison.
Yeah, in the 70s, Merck received funding from the United States government, and they learned that red yeast rice was poisoning its predators. What it was doing, it was causing the low production of cholesterol and the low production of CoQ10, a vital energy-producing molecule within the body. And as a result, the predator would die. Well, they learned how to isolate this, and they learned how to make their own version, and they have since turned it into Lipitor, Pravacol, these popular, Zocor, these popular cholesterol-lowering drugs, and now they're feeding it to people, and people are swallowing it on the premise that it's going to prevent heart attack, stroke, heart disease in general.
Well, now, of course, what do the studies really show? What do the scientific studies show about the difference between the people who take that and the who don't take it?
So clearly, these are the best-selling drugs of all time, and there's billions of dollars to be spent on studying these drugs. And what these studies show behind the scenes is that among healthy people, they do not prevent heart attack or stroke whatsoever.
If you haven't had a heart attack, if you have not had a stroke, and you get on these drugs, it doesn't do you a bit of good. There's no evidence at all that they help, and yet we're putting all the healthy people on that because, of course, there's a very small percentage of the people who have had a previous heart attack who will, of course, have less heart attacks in the future. But what about lethal heart attacks? Does it have any influence even with people who have a heart attack on lethal heart attacks?
There was one drug study done with Pravacol. And it showed, now there's been very minimal studies among people who have had a heart attack and those people who have been taking statin drugs. It shows that there might be a 3-4% decrease in heart attacks, but it doesn't increase the lifespan whatsoever. The overall mortality is zero. It does not increase the lifespan. So we have statin drugs, billion-dollar drugs, and none of them increase lifespan among any populations. And most importantly, these drugs have only been studied on populations of elderly men between the ages of 55 years old. That's it. Women, children, ethnic groups, these drugs have never been tested on these populations.
But of course, then because it did give you a small increase in or decrease in heart attacks, but not the longevity in older people.
Exactly, not the longevity.
Put everybody onto them. We'll be back here in just a moment with Shane Ellison right here at Radio Liberty. Okay, Shane, why don't you pick that up? You were just saying that these had never been studied in no large studies in women or young people, and the studies that they have are really in older people, and hadn't many of these people had previous heart attacks, or had they?
Yes, most of the statin drug trials have only been studied on middle-aged men, both who have been diagnosed with heart disease or who have not been diagnosed with heart disease. And none of the studies, not a single drug increases lifespan among this population. But yet, people are fearing cholesterol, and they're taking these drugs, and they're not understanding the side effects that are associated with taking a drug that doesn't increase lifespan.
No, but of course, they're being told, you don't want to die, you don't want to have a stroke, you don't want to have a heart attack, without understanding that this is not going to give you a significant increase in your in longevity in any way. And, of course, this is the important thing. If any of you would like to see, we actually have the sheet out of the physician's desk reference on Crestor. And there, you know, in small print, after reading a tremendous amount of material, the little words, it says, there is no evidence that this product increases cardiac, influences cardiac morbidity or cardiac mortality. What they should have said was heart disease or death from heart disease. But they use these fancy words, figuring nobody will understand what they mean, and we'll be glad to send you that page if anyone wants to call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Just ask for the Crestor information. Crestor. It is the most effective of the drugs, and it certainly lowers your cholesterol. It really does get it down, no question. But What does that do to the individual when you get the cholesterol down, Shane?
Yeah, that's a great point. It needs to be capitalized on, is that, yes, we're not, yes, these drugs lower cholesterol. We're not saying these drugs do not lower cholesterol. What we're saying is that these drugs do not increase lifespan, and they do not prevent heart attack among healthy people.
All right, fine, but what happens when you get the cholesterol down?
Exactly.
Well, I think this is an important issue because, you know, it's not simply get the cholesterol down, but what are the pharmacological effects on the human body of the statin drugs as far as CoQ10, as far as lowering the cholesterol level? What does that do to the individual?
We're going to talk about the most dangerous side effect of lowering cholesterol. This isn't a side effect of the drug itself. This is a side effect of the drug lowering the cholesterol, and these are well documented in my book that they can call you to order, The Hidden Truth About Cholesterol Lowering Drugs. I'm only going to talk about two of them, and the first one is well known. This was known when Merck filed their patent for Mevacor, that it lowers CoQ10 within the heart. Now, simply put, CoQ10 is an energy-producing molecule. It helps your heart produce ATP, adenosine triphosphate, and that is the fuel for your heart. Now, if you're lowering cholesterol with a statin drug, you're depleting the heart's fuel, and the heart weakens, and the end result is heart failure. Now, it's interesting because if a statin drug prevented heart disease, if it did, like they're promoting it, well, it might prevent heart disease, but it would kill you from heart failure.
And that's the thing. Every patient, if they were going to be put on statin drugs, should be put on CoQ10. And the drug companies know that, but the drug representatives never tell the doctors. And so the patient then begins to congestive heart failure, and then they have to give them another group of drugs to control the congestive heart failure that was created by the statin drugs. This is madness.
Yes, it's madness. It's beyond madness. I think it's criminal. And the second side effect we see emerging in these drug trials, although the drug companies have a very good way of hiding it, is cancer. Now, it's well known that cancer will increase as long as you have what's known as vascular endothelial growth factor. It's simply a growth factor that causes cancer to grow. And we're finding that the statin drugs mimic this growth factor. And as a result, we have statistically significant increases in cancer among those patients who are taking statin drugs.
Yeah, but this is never mentioned. At least the average doctor has no idea. How many cancers? You probably remember those figures far better than I do. But there was a significant difference between the control group, the group that did not get the statin drugs, and the other group where they were doing this double-blind study. How many cancers were there in one?
So we're talking about a 1,500% relative increase. 1,500% relative increase in cancer rates. Among the group who took the drugs, there were 12 cancers. Among the group who did not take the drugs, we're talking about, I believe, one or two cancers.
Right, as I remember, it was one. But anyway,
it was one. Now, what drug companies are doing, though, to try to push this information under the drug rug, is they're stopping the studies at about 4 or 5 years. It takes at least 5 years, minimum 5 years for cancer to develop. If you're an avid smoker, it would take 5 years for lung cancer to show up, minimum. So the drug companies know this. They stop the statin drug trials at year 4 or year number 5, and the cancer doesn't even show up. And they're saying, oh, no, there's no risk of cancer, none whatsoever. But yet they discard the fact that it's mimicking these growth factors and causing cancer at year 6, year 10, year 15.
But now, what about the Pravacol? Wasn't that the Pravacol study that showed the increase in cancer?
Yes.
And, of course, so they weren't going to make that mistake again. So, figures don't lie, but liars can figure. And so you tailor the study to come up with the conclusions you want to, because we're talking about billions of dollars that are made every year with long-term use of these drugs. And we know Lipitor, well, I don't know, what they make $12 billion or something, $1 billion?
It was the first drug to make $10 billion in a year, and that was in 2002. And the CEO of Pfizer is now making $87,000 per day. That's $87,000 per day for the CEO of Pfizer, and Pfizer markets Lipitor. So these things are not going to show up until a significant number of people died, just like Vioxx. You know, there was 100,000 people injured, 30 to 40% of those people died, and it finally came to the general public's attention that drugs are killing people.
But, of course, if you really understand that there are people out there who really have no human compassion, and one of the things that has been pointed out to me is that when you lower the cholesterol levels in a patient, you lower their testosterone and estrogen levels because, of course,
exactly.
Steroids, you know, the cholesterol is an essential ingredient. So if you believe in population control, let's get everybody onto the statin drugs because it will lower their hormonal level, lower the libido. There'll be difficulty as far as, you know, being able to have conception. These are wicked people. And the fact that our government goes along and nobody speaks out against this, you know, really is frightening. Have you run into this? Has anybody actually done any studies on the testosterone and estrogen levels in these people who are having their levels depleted because of the cholesterol depletion?
Well, what we find out is that exactly what you said. We have signs of hormone depletion, and those signs are definitely lower libido, mood drops, these people lack energy, and it's not surprising. The mechanistic explanation is very simple, and that's because cholesterol serves as a building block to all the vital hormones in the human body. And as you're lowering it, you're also lowering these hormones, which keep you young, they keep you healthy, they keep the immune system strong, they keep your libido up. These are the molecules that control people's lives, and they're being lowered.
And, of course, the other thing, and one of the things is, as far as the function of the brain is concerned, don't some people, as they get a very low cholesterol, begin having difficulty as far as their mental function is concerned?
Sure, that's the number one sign that you've had too many statin drugs. You more often begin to forget little things like where your keys are, even where the car is parked. And that's because cholesterol starts being depleted. Cholesterol is one of the vital components to the brain. It's a component of a myelin sheath that holds all the fat together, so your brain can send messages through the neurons, and as it's lowered, those messages can no longer be sent. And what happens? Dementia. Well, first it's forgetfulness, then it's dementia, then it's Alzheimer's. In the entire body, when it develops, we see Parkinson's disease.
Well, I think really the average individual who's taking this is being told by his doctor, you have to take this medication. We've got to get your cholesterol down. And your doctor really believes that because he's never heard any of the other things we're talking about.
That's what's so dangerous is that the doctors truly believe it. These doctors would prescribe these drugs to their own family members. And that's because marketing supersedes science. Like you preface this call with, doctors aren't reading the literature, or they don't know how to read through the statistics. They're not trained on it. They're trained in prescribing drugs, and that's what they're being marketed. Drug companies are sending reps in every day, 2-3 reps a day, sell these drugs. There's actually a new monitoring system by a GPS satellite, and they can monitor what doctors are prescribing drugs and what doctors aren't. And when they find out which doctors are not prescribing the drugs, well, an army of sales reps infiltrate the office. And they make damn sure these doctors prescribe the drugs. The shot caller is the license.
And, of course, I think that really the great, great tragedy is the doctors are being used in this without realizing it. What we have is a wonderful mechanism, you know, where we ingest a certain amount of cholesterol, but our liver then, of course, manufactures cholesterol to give us the required amount of cholesterol. And rather than, of course, letting the body manage itself, why, of course, then we interfere and we begin to lower the cholesterol. It looks good on the charts, but what does it do to the brain? What does it do, you know, as far as the absence of CoQ10 and, of course, the congestive heart failure, what does it do to the muscles? The people develop all sorts of muscle aches and pains and fatigue, and we'll be back here in just a moment with Shane Ellison. Welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Well, Shane, as you tell people this story across America, and I know you must be doing lots of radio programs, what sort of response do you get? A lot of people sort of incredulous, saying this couldn't be true, because I know my doctor. He's a good man. He really cares about me. And he's telling me, I've got to get my cholesterol down or I'm going to die.
Yeah, most people are taking the drugs, and most people are very open to my message, because these people, after they've been on the drugs 2-3 weeks, 2-3 years, they start feeling what I'm describing. They get muscle aches, they're depressed, the libido goes down, they lack motivation, sometimes they gain more fat. These are all side effects of the drug. So clearly, when they hear me talking about these side effects, they're receptive to it. And what's interesting is the body has a very, is very responsive. And when the people get off the drug, they say, give it 2 weeks. Give it 3 weeks. If you don't feel better physically and mentally, then you know that perhaps I'm not telling you the truth. But if you do feel better, then you can be confident that what I'm telling you is true. And so they give it 2 or 3 weeks, they feel amazing, they get their life back, and they never turn back. They just stop seeing their doctor, essentially. And of course, if we're talking about cholesterol increasing lifespan and not being the culprit, we have to address the real issue of heart disease. What's actually causing the skyrocketing rate of heart disease?
All right, well, what is causing the skyrocketing rate of heart disease?
I would say three things. I would say a sedentary lifestyle, lack of exercise. I would say lack of the essential nutrient, vitamin C. And I would say excess sugar consumption and sugar mimics. Everybody knows sugar tastes sweet to the tongue, but not all sugars taste sweet. We have monosodium glutamate, known as MSG. We have high fructose corn syrup, which does taste sweet. But there are several types of sugar mimics that have poisoned most of the food supply. And these things, sugar, they undergo glycation. And what happens is they cause scarring or plaque buildup within the mechanically stressed regions of the heart. And when they start scarring that region, if you don't have enough vitamin C to repair it, you get excess plaque buildup. And now you start suffering from coronary heart disease.
Well, then, of course, there are a fair number of people who have coronary heart disease that have a C-reactive protein. They have some sort of a chronic infection. And there are a lot of our people, because of the sexual promiscuity that has been encouraged by our public health service, saying, go ahead, just be as promiscuous as you want to, just use some protection. They get chronic chlamydia infection. And chlamydia plays a significant part in some heart disease, doesn't it?
Yes, you're exactly right. Definitely plays a part. I would say upwards of 5 to 10% of cases, infection can definitely cause scarring within the mechanically stressed regions of the heart. You got to remember, the coronary arteries are the only arteries, not the only, but they're undergoing mechanical stress. They're expanding all the time because of the heart pumping all the time. And it has to repair itself when it becomes damaged, and vitamin C is the rate-limiting step in that repair mechanism. And without it, we get excess plaque, excess inflammation, and chlamydia, viral infections, bacterial infections, can cause that scarring. And C-reactive protein is a marker for that inflammation. Again, that inflammation can be caused by sugar. It can be caused by sugar mimics.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment.
Sure.
Here our guest is Shane Ellison. We're talking already about the causes of heart disease. And of course, if you're out there in the listening audience, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And of course, Shane was talking about, you know, the effect of sugar, the effect of lack of exercise, the shortage of lack of vitamin C. All of these things are important for the good balance of the heart. I simply mentioned the fact that certain people have homocysteine levels that increase the incidence incidence of heart disease, and that's not large, but there's a significant number of heart attacks related to that, and then many of the people will have chlamydia infections. It's amazing how many people in America have chlamydia. We didn't see this when I went through medical school, but because of the change of the lifestyle, because of the promiscuity, because of the fact we have 60 million Americans with a sexually transmitted venereal disease, sexually transmitted viral disease. You know, of course, then the incidence of chlamydia infection and systemic chlamydia infection, and actually chlamydia plays a part as far as coronary artery disease is concerned as well. And the average individual is never even told that. Oh, it's all cholesterol. Well, you know, they're really not telling you the truth. If you get high doses of cholesterol, pardon me, vitamin C, you need to have that to keep your arteries strong. So pick up the story there, Shane.
Yes, you need vitamin C to keep your arteries strong. The arteries undergo mechanical stress, and as a result, they are susceptible to damage caused by excess sugar and infection. That's the cause of today's growing rates of heart disease. Period. And doctors and drug companies are beginning to catch on, and they're starting to monitor C-reactive protein, because the more C-reactive protein you have, the more inflammation you have, and therefore that inflammation might be within the coronary arteries. And so there's a change going on here, and they're starting to promote this health myth that, well, statin drugs, okay, here's what they're going to say in 5 years. They're going to say cholesterol doesn't have anything to do with it. We were wrong, but we've got it figured out. It's C-reactive protein, and Lipitor, and Pravacol, and Crestor, well, they're actually lower C-reactive protein.
And of course, they really do. They actually have an anti-inflammatory medication, don't they? Anti-inflammatory effect?
Yep, they do have a very small anti-inflammatory effect.
And that's really probably why there may be a 3% or 4% decrease in incidence of heart attack in people who have had previous heart attacks. Now, no change in mortality and death, but of course there is a 3 or 4%. But are you really going to take this sort of medication for a 3 or 4% advantage? And it's only been proven to be effective in people who've had a previous heart attack.
Yep. No, that's
people who have never had a heart attack. So why are they giving it to everybody?
Money. Now, that's a good point, because if these drugs, Lipitor, Pravacol, Crestor, if these drugs did have just an anti-inflammatory effect, you know, they could potentially be beneficial. Unfortunately, they have this side effect of lowering cholesterol. Now, we can extrapolate from that. We can extrapolate from their studies, which discovered that heart disease is an inflammatory disease caused by smooth muscle found within the coronary arteries. And if we can prevent or curtail that inflammation, we can greatly prevent heart disease. So, now your focus has to go away from cholesterol, and it has to go to preventing inflammation. How does one prevent inflammation without lowering cholesterol? There are some great ways to do it. Lifestyle factors. Start exercising. You exercise, your body produces anti-inflammatory molecules known as cytokines. You can start eating more fish, obtain fish oils, DHA, EPA from fish oil. Vitamin D from cod liver oil or from the sun are fantastic anti-inflammatory agents, and they do not lower your cholesterol. Things like this can be great assets to preventing heart disease.
And so there are really many, many things that you actually can do to prevent heart disease, but it's really up to you, and certainly vitamin C is so important, and exercise is
vitamin
so important.
C, I usually recommend 5 to 10 grams of vitamin C a day. We've seen great benefits with that amount in the trials, in the studies that have been done. And, you know, more than preventing inflammation through supplements is preventing it through lifestyle. I mean, stop eating sugar. Stop drinking fruit juice. Stop drinking soda. I mean, these things are heart attacks in a can.
They know all of these things. It has a toxic effect on your brain. It predisposes you to getting to diabetes. And if you haven't gotten our material on aspartame, you really need to. It has certainly many of these people have profound neurological changes because of the aspartame they take, because it is a neurotoxin. Why are they putting it in our drinks? Well, you'll have to ask yourself that same question. Is it possible that there are wicked and evil people out there like Donald Rumsfeld, who actually made millions of dollars because, of course, he got that by the FDA? Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Shane Ellison, and of course, we're talking about the statin drugs. Now, if you have a question or comment, you agree or disagree, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. We've put together a four-tape set, a couple of interviews with Shane and with other people on the statin drugs. And so you'll get all sorts of different approaches to the statin drugs, but all of the experts agree this is a scam. We have Shane's book on the statin drugs. We have a book that we carry by Dr. Marshall Angel, who was on the staff at Harvard, who for many years was the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, the most prestigious of all medical journals. And she was there until she wrote a book called The Truth About the Drug Companies, about how they were scamming the American people and putting all these drugs on the market. Yeah, they were simply Me Too drugs, and the science, the research was all being done with your tax money, and of course the proceeds were going to the drug companies and their CEOs and their stockholders, and many of these drugs were really not effective at all, or certainly were not different in any respect from the original drugs. But of course, as soon as the patent runs out, they have to modify it so they can keep up the profits. And poor old Dr. Angel came under tremendous attack, to the point where she won't even answer her emails. I've tried to get her under our programs, but I'm sure they've made her life miserable for daring to tell the American people the truth. The book, The Truth About the Drug Companies, the author, Dr. Marshall Angel, that along with Shane Ellison's book on statin drugs, both are available at Radio Liberty, along with our four-tape set on statin drugs. Well, Shane, do you think the attitude of the American people is beginning to change? Do you think they're beginning to realize that that this is a gigantic scam? And what about the doctors? Have you talked to any doctors who've come to understand pretty the danger that they're putting their patients in by giving them statin drugs and lowering their cholesterol dramatically?
You bet. I've had great feedback from a handful of medical doctors, and it's interesting. I think one simple story from one medical doctor reflects how the majority of medical doctors are being treated. And the medical doctor called to get some nutritional information from me, and I confronted him. I said, why not get your patients on this information and stop prescribing the statin drugs? And he simply flat out said, you know what? They come to me and ask for them. And he had one patient who asked for them. He said, I'm not giving you Lipitor. And the patient asked, why not? And he explained why, for the same reasons we're talking about tonight. And the patient went home without a prescription for Lipitor.
Well, that would be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Shane Ellison. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. And of course, Shane has been telling us the story of statin drugs. So, Shane, go ahead and pick up the story.
So the doctor's response was he did not give his patient Lipitor because he understood the underlying dangers of Lipitor. The patient went home. The patient had a heart attack 2 weeks later and survived. The patient said he had a heart attack, never mind that he was insulin resistant, never mind that he consumed excess sugar, and never mind that he was morbidly obese, but the patient said that he had his heart attack because the doctor didn't give him Lipitor. And the courts upheld that decision, and the doctor was sued for $700,000. Now, the doctor said, I don't take Lipitor, but when my patients come in and ask for it because of the commercials, I'm going to give them whatever the hell they want. And that's why doctors are being pushed into a corner. We have direct-to-consumer advertising, which dictates to patients, demand drugs, ask your doctor, ask your doctor. And when the doctor doesn't do it, they become liable. And so, unfortunately, many doctors are waking up, and as we educate more people with this information and more books, the patients are waking up. That's why we have to educate patients, not doctors. They have a shock collar, and it's called a license. If they don't do what they're told, they lose their license. So we have to educate patients.
And what a tragedy that is.
It's too bad. And, you know, this book, The Hidden Truth About Cholesterol-Lowering Drugs, they can call you to get it. They can get it for themselves. They can get it for their family members. We're talking $9.95. It's 90 pages, very fast, informative read. It'll blow people's minds.
Well, let's go ahead, Shane. And I do have a website people can go to and get your other information.
I do. It's simply healthmyth.net. Healthmyth.net. H-E-A-L-T-H, myth, M-Y-T-H-S.net.
Would you like to talk about some of the other problems you see in modern-day medicine?
I'm not sure if we have enough time for that.
Well, with the time that we have.
Sure, the lack of nutrition. I mean, most diseases, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, insulin resistance, these are diseases due to nutrient deficiencies. And these nutrient deficiencies have been well-defined in the scientific literature. And the reason they're so well-defined is that drugs are derived from nutrition. Drug chemists like myself are always scouring nutrition, nutritional supplements, and trying to mimic a single isolate from a nutrition supplement to call it their own, to call it their new latest greatest drug. And we talked earlier about that with statins. They came from red yeast rice. Unfortunately, that's not, well, it's being sold as a nutritional supplement, but it's not. It doesn't have any nutritional value. It's a poison, and that's how it was discovered, because it was killing its predators and surviving, because it was lowering cholesterol, lowering CoQ10. So within the medical industry, we see a lack of nutritional information. And if people embrace nutrition, they'll be able to embrace health. But to do that, they have to let go of all the health myths, like lowering your cholesterol. Like, doctors are aware of the atrocities being committed. Doctors are not aware. Doctors are drug prescribers. The list goes on, and I wrote a book called Health Myths Exposed, and I talk about the 10 most devastating health myths of our time.
Well, what are those 10 myths?
Well, cholesterol is number one, and off the top of my head, number two would be that the FDA approves safe and effective drugs. Most people see the FDA as a watchdog for public health. But as they're learning, the FDA is simply a lapdog for drug companies. The FDA is being paid by drug companies to review drugs. And if these drugs are not reviewed in a positive light, guess what? No money. The FDA used to be funded by the government. Now they're funded by the drug industry. That's the biggest health myth that needs to be exposed, along with the cholesterol myth. We have others like dieting is the cure to obesity, or that direct-to-consumer advertising, the commercials you see, are trustworthy and honest. And we have a second edition coming out in June. And I won't spill the beans on anymore.
All right, fine. Well, I hope when you get it out, you will give us, send us a copy.
You bet. I'll make sure you guys have one of the first copies.
But I really think that, ladies and gentlemen, you really need to learn about nutrition. Nutrition can help you so much, and there's so many things that are in our regular diet and in our environment that are toxic. And one of them, of course, is fluoride in any form. Certainly, even fluoride toothpaste is toxic. Now, I happen to use it, and I will tell you why, because I quit using it. I got cavities. Why did I get cavities? Because it is such a powerful poison that it poisons the bacteria in your mouth. And that's where cavities come from, is the bacteria in your mouth. And if you're ingesting sugars, then, of course, the bacteria attack the sugars, produces an acid, dissolves the enamel, and that's where the cavities come from. But anything in the way fluoride in food and fluoride in water and fluoride in fruit juices, this is all a very powerful poison. Have you looked into the background of fluoride and how we're poisoning people all across America? Literally hundreds of millions of people in the United States with water fluoridation, and no other country will allow a widespread water fluoridation. None of it's not allowed in Europe and in India and in China. They're trying to get the fluoride out of the water, and here we're adding it. Why? Because it affects the brain, it makes the people docile, it lowers the fertility rate, it is carcinogenic, certainly it has an effect on the bones, on the endocrine system, it increases the incidence of heart disease. All of these things are well known. And if you haven't read the wonderful book we carry called The Fluoride Deception, we recommend that very, very strongly. Have you looked into fluoride at all, Shane?
Oh, you bet I have. I'm fully aware of the detrimental effects of fluoride, and I'm always, you know, helping people. You know, that's the first approach to proper nutrition is getting healthy water into the body, and I'm always looking for new and improved water filters to ensure that the fluoride is being taken out of the water.
What's the most efficient filters that you've found to get the fluoride?
Well, you know, there's so many things that need to come out of water that to really purify water, it has to go through many different purification systems, activated charcoal, carbon filter. I think reverse osmosis is a great way to get fluoride out. The fluoride molecule is very small. Sometimes it can escape different carbon filters. I think reverse osmosis is among the best ways to get the fluoride out of the water. But it has to go under or through further processing in order to get other things out of the water. There's new things being put into the water every day because more people are taking drugs and excreting them into the water supply. And the city water filters aren't designed to handle these different things. So, talking about several layers, I think reverse osmosis is one of the best.
All right, fine. And so certainly you need pure water. And I don't get distilled water, though, because they've taken all the minerals out. But
exactly.
Nice if you can maintain the level. But watch very carefully. Sometimes they'll even add the fluoride to it. And that's the last thing you want.
Yep, exactly. They're adding it. You know, you can go to Walmart and buy distilled water with added fluoride for your baby.
And, of course, what it does, it impacts on the mind of that child. And you can lose 10 points from your IQ, 5 or 10 points from the IQ, with water fluoridation, and they know that. They just don't want you to know that. Because the last thing they want is a lot of smart people around.
Yeah, that's the last thing. They want people who are running scared from having high cholesterol.
Well, okay, fine. Of course, we know, for instance, that a NutraSweet is toxic. We know that the mercury that they're giving us in our vaccines is toxic.
Sure.
What are some of the other things that you found?
Well, it's interesting on NutraSweet and artificial flavors. One of the biggest things you're hiding with the artificial flavors is that it disrupts the tongue's ability to tell the brain that it's overeating. And it's been well documented in the studies that if a person is consuming artificial flavors, they disrupt these receptors on the tongue, and the tongue can no longer tell the person that they're overeating. And what happens? Well, after consuming the Diet Coke, you eat lunch, like two lunches, but you really mentally feel like you ate one lunch. Hell, you might feel like you're dieting, because your tongue, because of artificial flavors like sucralose, neotame, acesulfam K, aspartame, your tongue can no longer communicate to your brain that you're overeating. I mean, the tongue is the first thing that food comes in contact with. It's like your food calculator. Well, when you're consuming artificial flavors, your food calculator is off. It's no longer working. And you're stuffing your body, and in 6 months' time, you're going to be fatter.
Now, what about MSG, and what effect does that have?
Excellent point. Monosodium glutamate. Read your labels. If you go to Walmart and read your labels, monosodium glutamate or hydrolyzed proteins is in almost any food that's in a box or a can. It's even in Campbell's soup. If you think you're healthy because you're eating soup, you're not. MSG disrupts your metabolism instantly. It's like an invisible sugar. It causes your insulin to skyrocket. And when the body has high insulin, it goes into fat storage mode. Insulin's a storage hormone. It starts storing fat, and you get fat because you're sucking down MSG, and you don't even know it. MSG was developed when they needed obese rats. They needed diabetic rats to study diabetic medicines. Well, rats aren't obese. What'd they give them? They gave them MSG. Subsequently, they put that into the food supply because it's addicting. When we get high insulin, just like sugar, we get a flood of endorphins, just as if you're taking more heroin. Obviously, it's not as extensive or as instant, but it's still similar. You get endorphins, you feel great. That's why women, men eat chocolate when they're depressed. Well, same with MSG. You get sick, you think about Campbell's soup because you're depressed. Campbell's soup skyrockets insulin. You feel great, you think you're better. Wrong. You've got MSG. And over time, you will grow obese.
And, of course, both MSG and aspartame, which is Nutraceed, produced pathological obesity. They've known that for a long time. And so what do they do? Why, they put the aspartame, the Nutraceed, into the various diet colas. And have you ever noticed that all these fat people drinking the diet colas, why are they fat? Because they're drinking the diet colas, and they're drinking them because they don't have any sugar in them, and they think it's going to make them thin. But, of course, we also know that it has a profound effect on the brain, and I think this is really responsible for so much of the dementia and Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's we're seeing in younger and younger and younger people, because both MSG and aspartame are excitotoxins. We carry a wonderful book by our good friend Dr. Blaylock called Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills, giving you all the scientific studies that show that what they're putting into our food is not only making us obese and it predisposing us to cancer, but it's also, of course, certainly having a profound impact on our brains. And that is really what's so frightening. Destroy the brain, you destroy the individual.
That's right, and this addictive quality of Diet Coke, the diet soda, is seen exactly by what you say, that the obese people are sucking down diet soda. And it's absurd. I mean, if you're going to drink diet soda or any soda, you might as well drink the stuff with sugar in it. Granted, it's an evil, but it's lesser of the evils, because it's not going to cause the brain damage that we see with the artificial flavors, the excitotoxins.
And, of course, the average individual has no idea of the dangers of Nutraceed and of MSG. And, of course, they have all these names for the MSG, like hydrolyzed protein, yep, hydrolyzed soy. And you really need almost a list. You have some sort of a list where people can go and find all the confusing names that they have for these items, which are intensively confusing, so that people will not know that they're being poisoned?
Yes, I do have a list. And it can be obtained for free if they send an email to healthmyths@getresponse.com. It'll be automatically delivered to them along with lots of other good information. They can get the list also from healthmyths.net, because the drug companies, the food companies, are becoming very good at disguising the monosodium glutamate. And you need a list. I've put the list together. It's at healthmyths@getresponse.com. Send an email or just go to the website healthmyths.net and you can sign up to get it instantly. And, the biggest thing is if you see the word hydrolyzed in small print on your food label, don't eat it. Go to your organic food store, get some natural food, simple food. Stop eating hydrolyzed proteins, hydrolyzed soy proteins, hydrolyzed whey proteins, or monosodium glutamate.
And, of course, they intentionally will confuse you with all these false names. Learn, of course, what's going on and learn how to protect yourself.
Yeah, and get off the sugar. I mean, no more soda, no more diet soda, no more fruit juice. If you want fruit, you need the pectin and the fiber in the fruit. That means you got to eat whole fruit. That's going to slow the absorption of the fructose, and that's going to prevent the spike in insulin. That's going to prevent fat storage.
My telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And unless you begin to learn about these nutritional facts, unless you learn how to read the labels on the prepared food, why, you're going to be poisoning your family. And I know my wife certainly reads all of those labels. It takes a lot of time, but you have to event to learn which products are safe and which are not.
Sure, you got to pay the price if you want to be healthy, and that means reading your labels, getting rid of refined salt. Go to sea salt. Get some all-natural sea salt. Get magnesium, potassium, all the minerals you need, electrolytes you need, and it tastes great.
And, of course, you don't want the refined salt, but the sea salt has all the trace elements in it, doesn't it?
Exactly.
All right, fine. Well, of course, now we've talked about then these myths from that point of view. What are some of the other things that that we should be telling our listeners to be concerned about?
Being sedentary. I mean, you know, people are always looking for the latest, greatest, new fad diet, new fad supplement, new fad medicine, but they forget the basic fundamentals of being healthy, and that is exercise. I mean, we see great some great studies showing benefit of exercising simply 3 days a week, 45 minutes a day. 45-minute exercise routine, 3 days a week. Anybody can do that. That means move, get your heart rate up.
And, of course, all these things are really essential to maintaining your health. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, we're moving into some very, very difficult times. And you need to know what to take. There are lots of things out there that you're not getting in your diet that you need to maintain your energy, to maintain your health, to maintain your ability to fight disease. And certainly vitamin C and vitamin D and selenium and zinc and
magnesium.
Right. And certainly garlic. Garlic is a wonderful product. And, of course, oil oregano is a great antibiotic. You need to learn all of these things. You need to begin to think. You need to begin to think health-wise. We're going to be back in just a moment here with our guest, Shane Ellison, right here at Radio Liberty. All right, Shane, go ahead and pick up the story there.
Sure, we're talking about essential nutrients, basic fundamental facts of nutrition and healthy living. We spoke about water, purified water, reverse osmosis water with no fluoride. We spoke about getting off of sugar, the monosodium glutamate, look for hydrolyzed proteins on your labels, and most importantly, start exercising. You need to train your muscle cells to respond to insulin, and the best way to do that is to exercise. We're talking 3 days a week, 45 minutes at a time. Something called interval training works great. You can get a free workout. You send an email to healthmyths@getresponse.com. You get a free workout. It tells you exactly how to customize a workout for you so you can become more sensitive to insulin.
And really, of course, the exercise then does help your body then to respond to insulin more normally?
Exactly, because if you pull glucose out of the bloodstream and into the muscle cell, then you relinquish a demand of insulin from the pancreas. And when you have low insulin, your body's metabolism is able to burn fat rather than store fat. But if you have high insulin due to high blood sugar, then your body is no longer taking part in thermogenesis. Instead of converting fat to heat, it's storing fat and it's burning carbohydrates and amino acids for fuel, or specifically for ATP production. You need to be able to control your insulin. I mean, insulin, controlling insulin has been called the master control of all disease, because we need to lower our insulin and our body, our hormones, can function much better, especially the metabolism. It can burn fat. Your body becomes a fat burner and not a sugar or carbohydrate burner.
All right, fine. Well, we've got a caller here. Let's see if we can get them on here. And we've got, is it David? David calling from... Hi, David. How are you doing?
How are we doing? Good evening.
Doing fine. You got just about a minute here. So,
okay, you guys were talking about fluoride in the water and stuff like that, but I also hear that there's, I like to drink green tea. Is there fluoride in green tea or any of the other teas?
Go ahead. What's your response to that?
Yes, that's a great question. You're right. Lipton tea has, for whatever reason, has the most fluoride out of any other teas, and green teas do seem to have an affinity or molecules that have fluoride in it. And because so much pollution and waste, factory pollution and factory waste, has a fluoride molecule in it, these teas, depending on where they're cultivated, are absorbing the fluoride. You're exactly right.
And what a few plants that will actually absorb fluoride, the rest of them abhor it, but you will get it in your green tea. But I hope that answers your question. We've got to let you go. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Thanks, David.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, our guest has been Shane Ellison. Shane, thanks very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
It's a great show. Thanks for having me on. I look forward to future shows as well.
Yeah, give me a copy of a new book when it comes out.
You bet I will. Thank you.
That's okay. Fine. Well, that was Shane Ellison, and we've been talking really about your health. If you'd like to know more about the statins, why we have Shane's excellent book. It's very, very small, but it's got a lot of great information. We have a 4-tape set on the statins. Guys, one of my favorite books, sort of my wife's Bible, is Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life by Dr. Russell Blaylock. We carry his book, Excitotoxins, The Taste It Kills, and his book, Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients. And if you have somebody in your family that's going to have chemotherapy, and they're going to take it, you certainly want to know what to do to keep your hair from falling out and getting violently ill. Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients can be used in conjunction with chemotherapy, and I think you'll be surprised at the results. And then we have, of course, other books. We have Dr. Strand's book, Death by RX. We have another book called Death by Medicine. We have a great book on magnesium. And magnesium is a very, very important element. It has effects on the heart and certainly helps you to relax. I remember when I was in medicine, this is one thing that you would give to a woman who was convulsing during pregnancy because of eclampsia. I never asked, what else will magnesium do? Well, it'll sedate the people. You don't have to have eclampsia, and it has a profound impact on the heart. Anyway, we have a great book going into the background of magnesium. There's so much good information. We have a 4-tape set, Health and Nutrition, the Life-Saving Secrets, my interviews with Dr. Blaylock. We have a great 4-tape set on vitamin C. Everything you need to know about vitamin C and why you really have to increase your take, and I think we take, I think I'm probably taking 1,000 milligrams, maybe 2,000 milligrams a day. My wife lays all these things out for us, but I'm 77 and going strong, and hopefully I'll be able to continue for a good long while, at least as long as God wants me behind the microphone. So if you'd like more information on these products we've talked about, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like one of our free newsletters, we'll be glad to send it to you. But we cover all sorts of topics. We talk about finance. We talk about healthcare matters. We talk about politics. But all of these things are important. And you've got to learn how to take care of your health. And I'm firmly convinced that if you don't, you're going to become simply another victim of a medical establishment. Doctors are wonderful people who want to help you, but unfortunately, many of them have never read the scientific studies on the statin drugs. And that's why the 4-tape set we put together and the book Shane has written on statin drugs is so important. And again, our 4-tape set on vitamin C, our 4-tape set on aspartame, our 4-tape set on life-saving secrets, my interviews with Dr. Russell Blaylock, and then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, remembering we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. And lastly, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until we're together again, may the Lord be with you.